This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On March 30th, 35,000 ambitious, anxious, smart, and stressed-out high school seniors will run to their email boxes and open them up to find out if they might one day be living in the same dorm once inhabited by Mark Zuckerberg.
We are, of course, talking about Harvard admissions.
And I know that Facebook isn't the only thing ever to come out of Harvard Yard.
But one of the things that makes Harvard different is that it tells all of its applicants at once whether or not they've been admitted.
Unlike other universities that have so-called early admissions programs. Because back in 2006, Harvard and Princeton announced they were going to eliminate their early admission program, saying it advantages the advantaged, in other words, white, wealthy students.
The schools hoped that by setting an example, other schools would follow suit.
But they didn't, and now Harvard and Princeton are reintroducing early admissions.
The question is why, and at what cost to those who aren't the advantaged? Early admission and unequal access in higher education, that's our talker today.
And here to talk about the decision is Chris Avery. He's professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government and author of The Early Admissions Game. Chris Avery, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hello.
Also joining us is Julie Park. She is an assistant professor of educational leadership at Miami University and co-author of the study Who Goes Early. Julie Park, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, great to be here.
So Chris Avery, before we get too far, even though you are a Harvard professor, I should say that you do not speak for Harvard administration per se. We asked Mr. Fitzsimmons, who's the dean of the admissions and financial aid office at Harvard, to join us. We also asked President Drew Faust to join us. They all declined. So I just want to make that clear that you're not speaking for the institution of Harvard, but rather the studies that you've done yourself, correct?
No, that's certainly correct.
Okay, good. Well, so just take us back for those people who maybe are at a distance time-wise from the college application process or who never went through it. What exactly, remind us, is the early admissions process that Harvard is coming back to right now?
Sure. Well, there's lots of complexity involved, and that's part of the problem. Harvard and other colleges traditionally have offered early application programs that were originally designed to give information to the students who were the most likely to be admitted, just relieving the stress for them that they had been admitted early in the year. And those students who were so spectacular that they were the top candidates could be admitted, and that simplified the process both for them and for the universities. They just apply to the one college you like the most, you're a competitive applicant, you get admitted, it's all done. The problem then was that colleges started to use this as a competitive tool. So one of the programs is called Early Decision. An early decision requires students to commit to attend if they're admitted. And additionally, then students started to realize that there were going to be advantages in increasing your admissions chances if you applied early. Historically, these advantages were magnified by the fact that admissions offices were kind of cagey about it, and they said, we actually don't provide any advantage to students who do apply early. Mm-hmm. When my co-authors Richard Zeckhauser and Andy Fairbanks and I got some data and analyzed it, we found, in fact, there's a big advantage at the most selective colleges to applying early, either early action, which didn't require a commitment, or early decision, which did require a commitment. And as a result, that's a huge informational advantage for those students who are well plugged in.
Okay, so let me just step in here just so, sure, to be clear. So, I mean, from the student's perspective or the parent's perspective even, one of the big differences, just time-wise, is that you apply by, what, mid-November and you,
yes,
find out by early December if you've gotten in.
The dates vary a little bit, but that's approximately right.
Roughly.
That's
for
generally
those,
right.
And
yeah,
for those that have binding early decision, that's the college that you're going to.
Exactly.
Okay, and for those that don't, like Harvard now, since it's reinstated, you still, you know, you can sort of shop around for other universities.
Exactly.
Okay, so Julie Park, let me ask you, Chris Avery mentioned that there were certain advantages to applying early. Did you find that same thing? And what are those advantages and who's benefiting from them?
Sure. Our study didn't focus specifically on the advantages associated with applying early. Chris has done a lot of great research showing that there's about, you know, 17 to 20% increased chance of increased probability of admissions through early action, and then about 30 to 37% with early decision. So almost akin to a 100-point boost on your SAT after all other variables are held constant. So it seemed like there was enough research showing that there were clearly benefits associated with applying early, and we wanted to know more about the characteristics of students who applied early. And so what we found in the end was that the strongest variable people associated with enrolling due to applying through early action or early decision was receiving private college counseling.
And who are the types of students who are receiving private college counseling?
Typically those who can pay for it. I hear it's pretty expensive.
So we're talking about students who are in the upper income bracket. Is there sort of a racial disparity here as well?
Yes, we also found, controlling for all these variables, that students of color were significantly less likely to enroll due to early admissions.
Okay, so this is the thing that Harvard wanted to push back against back in 2006 when it said, no, we're not going to do early admissions anymore because, you know, as you found, it's unfair to low-income and minority students. Chris Avery, is that correct?
Certainly that's one of the factors. In addition, Harvard and Princeton, when they did eliminate early action, went to some lengths to emphasize the fact they were trying to recruit students from low-income and minority backgrounds with other programs. But certainly, I think that it was partly worrying about the mechanics and partly trying to make a real clear statement that early applications had been historically associated with favoring the elites and the wealthy, and if they were going to get rid of it, that just suggests more of a level playing field for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me throw some questions out to our listeners, many of whom I presume are parents of high school seniors or high school juniors, or maybe you're a student yourself. Did you apply to Harvard this year? And if it had early admissions when you applied, would you have done it? Are you relieved to hear that universities like Harvard, like Princeton, are now going back to a system where you can apply early and get in? Or do you see this as perpetuating an unequal or an unlevel playing field when it comes to higher education and access from low-income and minority students? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And also, if you're a high school junior or senior and you applied or are thinking about applying to college, give us a call, because I hear it's getting to be a pretty stressful time period for students and in their lives. I'd love to hear about what you're going through right now. Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Julie Park, you in your study, Who Goes Early, you found out something which I thought was just remarkable, that applying early to places like Harvard gave you the equivalent in your application was akin to a 100-point boost on the SAT. What does that mean?
Yeah, that was actually Chris's study that found that.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. But yeah, basically when, you know, college admissions, especially at the level of students who are applying to Harvard, where there's so many different variables that go into account, so it's difficult to really standardize anything, since with holistic admissions, you're taking more into account than test scores and GPAs, et cetera. You're looking at special talents, potential for leadership, things like that. But I believe in Chris's study, they tried to standardize these, you know, observable characteristics. And when you held all of these background variables constant, it seemed that applying early was associated with basically a 100-point boost on your SAT.
Wow, that's amazing. Chris Avery, so is this, I mean, I'm going to just back up here. The thing that Harvard announced when it last week said we're going to bring early admission back is that, ironically, William Fitzsimmons, the dean of admissions and financial aid there, said by not having early admission, it actually took us out of the running of being the university where, you know, the brightest low-income and minority students were going, because they were being poached by places like Stanford.
Well, that's the big disadvantage. But there's two things that are really important to think about with Harvard and Princeton's decision being the only colleges. One is, I think they were trying to start a chain reaction. And Shirley Tilghman of Princeton, the president, said, we hoped other colleges and universities would do the same, and they haven't. That was one of her rationales for going back to the early action program there. I'm sure that Harvard was thinking something the same. And the cost that these universities took on by eliminating their early programs is that students who are angling for every advantage are going to apply early. That's the obvious thing to do. That's what a private college counselor would tell you to do. That's what any admissions guidebook will tell you to do at this point, because you're increasing your chance of admission to one college. Why wouldn't you do that? But there's a secondary part, which is that suppose Harvard's your first choice, but you apply early somewhere else, to Yale, for example, which is a single choice early action, one college early action. If you get into Yale, even though Harvard was your initially your first choice, it's sort of costly to apply to Harvard. And now, by virtue of the fact that it's the first place you're admitted, maybe Yale is a psychological default. So Harvard was losing lots of students in this way. And that's one of the things that they emphasized, that Dean Michael Smith emphasized in their statement. He says, we saw that many talented students were choosing programs with an early action option. And we're missing out on the opportunity to consider Harvard. That's just saying we're losing out in the competition. So Princeton and Harvard took on a big cost to try to change the world, and they didn't. No other colleges eliminated their early programs, and after a few years, I think that both colleges it looked like they were incurring costs for what might be a nice purpose, but wasn't actually changing the world and probably wasn't worth it to continue.
Well, Chris Avery and Julie Park, there's a ton of callers I want to get to. Joan is calling from Duxbury. Welcome to Radio Boston, Joan.
Hi.
What's your thought?
I'm calling because I have two sons. My third one's getting ready to go to college soon in a couple of years. But my two first sons, I had to discourage them from doing early decision because what we felt was that when we were looking at these expensive colleges was that if you went early decision, you would have to promise to go to that college before you knew if you were getting a financial aid package. And I think that's what's difficult, particularly for a middle-income family who you need that to go to expensive college. You would need that financial aid, but you'd have to say for sure you were going to go there before you knew if you were getting it.
Yeah, so you're promising something.
I felt like it was a real disadvantage that way. Unless you were wealthy, you couldn't go early decision because you couldn't be sure that you were going to get the money.
Exactly. You're promising something that you may not be able to pay for. Joan, thank you so much for your call. Julie Park, I mean, seems to be one of the big issues behind this, that if you can't pay for it and you don't know how much financial aid you're going to get, how can you say yes to a university when they offer you admissions early?
So that is one of the key equity concerns with early decision policies. Now, for Harvard and Princeton, they decided to bring back early action. And I do believe before Princeton had early decision, but now they're turning to non-binding early action. I think it's single choice early action. There's so many variations. But definitely Cornell, Columbia, Dartmouth, Brown, Penn, they all still employ early decision.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic number of students that actually get admitted this way. I read that at Penn, up to 50% of their freshman class comes in through binding early decision. And you're right, Harvard, Princeton, and Virginia, when they reinstated their programs this month, those are all non-binding. But Stanford and Yale, also non-binding. Yale apparently gets 43% of its students this way. It's an incredible number. Let's go to another call. Barbara is calling from Wellesley. Welcome to Radio Boston, Barbara.
Thank you. Hi. I just wanted to add that our public high school, Wellesley High School, told the seniors, I have two senior daughters, told them only do early decision if you're positive where you want to go. One of my children was sure she wanted to go to a certain place, so she did early decision. The other did not. And we were told that in terms of applying for financial aid, that was the one thing that you could do after early decision and find out, you know, if that was a problem, then that would be the only thing that would relieve you from the commitment.
Mm. Barbara, did you find this whole process confusing? Did your daughters find it stressful?
They found it stressful, but only because they were anxious to know if they got in for one of them, the one place she wanted to go, and the other one of the few places she wanted to go. The other thing I didn't understand that was said was that most people who use college counselors are the ones who did early action or early decision, and it's the exact same application, so I don't understand. We didn't use a college counselor, so I don't understand what the big deal was.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, I'll get a response from that from Julie Park. Thank you so much for your call, Barbara. Julie, I believe you're the one who said that. Do you want to clarify for her?
Sure. I'm sure that there definitely are students who don't use private college counselors and end up applying early decision or early action. Our data set was 88,000 first-time, full-time college students. So we're looking to kind of spot broader trends instead of specific cases. So I'm sure that there probably are a number of families that are able to apply early decision or early action, especially when they attend well-resourced high schools where you have college counselors who are telling them this information. But there is it seems to be a trend with students who are using private college counseling that this is something that they're particularly attuned to.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about Harvard reinstating its early admission program. Princeton did it too just this month. That's after many years of saying, we don't want to do early admissions because it's unfair to minority and low-income students. high school students, if you're out there listening, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, because I want to know what the process is like for you today and if you are glad that Harvard's got early admissions back. Same thing with parents and teachers. What do you make of all this? Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Chris Avery, you mentioned that Harvard it was trying to change the world by leveling the playing field in part by rescinding early admissions. Didn't exactly change the world. But on the other hand, I was looking, there were 35,000 applicants to Harvard this year. About 7% of them are going to be admitted. They are, many of them are the cream of the crop. Amazing numbers. 3,000 of the applicants, this is for 2010, scored a perfect score on the SAT critical reading. 3,600 of them were ranked number one in their high school classes. I mean, you'd think that the applicant pool is large enough that Harvard isn't losing out on the cream of the crop because that portion of students is so large.
Yeah, I know every year at the end of the application process, there's this sort of stereotypical, predictable statement that will come from administrators at Harvard or any other one of these most selective colleges where they say, not only do we have a great class, but we could have admitted another class equally impressive on paper, but we like the ones that we admitted better. And so, yes, you're talking about a very small, fine-grained distinctions. Could anyone other than Harvard afford and Princeton? Who could afford most to not have an early program? Exactly colleges like Harvard and Princeton that have these tremendous applicant pools, and if they lose a few people to another college, it doesn't look their incoming class won't look very different. On the other hand, you let off with the idea of students who want to be the next Mark Zuckerberg. Well, maybe, to an admissions office, maybe they're losing that one or five or ten truly spectacular students who look the same on paper as everybody else, but who they're just that much more enthusiastic about. So, sure, it's probably not a big loss on paper, but it apparently was enough that the admissions offices and the universities felt it, and you can understand that.
Let's get another call in here. Mairead is calling from Providence. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mairead.
Hi, thank you. I would just like to say that I go to a private Quaker school in Providence, and I have to agree because a lot of the kids in my class who are looking to apply to a really good school like Harvard or another Ivy did apply to Yale only because they do have an early program, and I think that attracted a lot of the kids in my class to apply there, and I definitely agree that the process is very, very stressful, especially when you're applying to a great school like Harvard or Yale or any of those schools.
Mairead, why is it that early decision is so attractive? Is it just because then you're not stressed out for the rest of the year and you know where you're going?
Yeah, I think that aspect of it is very attractive for kids. And basically, I think it's just to take some of the stress off for most people, just to be able to kind of know that they're at least in somewhere and that they can kind of rest easy and kind of cool down. Because especially senior year, a lot of kids just want to, get ready for college and kind of end their high school career as soon as possible.
Mairead, thank you so much for your call. And good luck to you, by the way, in your educational future. Julie Park, let me ask you, in institutions like Harvard, like Princeton, they obviously have the infrastructure and the money to really do some aggressive outreach programs to low-income and minority students. And in their defense, they are. They travel to cities, they talk to schools, et cetera. But do you have a concern that maybe the applicant pool or maybe those students who are admitted and make up the freshman class starting in 2017 is going to change because of this return to early admission?
Because Harvard and Princeton, they do have the luxury of having these really large applicant pools. And so in terms of a radical change, it's really difficult to say. Considering that they are using non-binding early action and early decision, at the end of the day, in terms of the equity concerns, I feel like if they increase, hopefully, outreach to these underserved communities, then maybe there won't be as big of a ramification. On the other hand, I think it's important to realize that early decision affects institutions. Early decision and early action affects not just Ivy League institutions, but there's also a great number of kind of mid-selectivity institutions that use these practices, especially early decision. And I think that is a great concern for equity in terms of being able to have this sort of earlier decision, earlier due date, and receive some sort of preference in the application process, basically because you can afford to pay full tuition.
Chris Avery, we just got seconds to go, and I just wanted to ask you a quick question on that issue. And again, we've just got seconds. I'm sorry about this, but you know, Dean Fitzsimmons says they're really hoping to level a playing field in a world that's inherently an unlevel playing field. Is that possible?
You know, Dean Fitzsimmons has been trying to do this for many, many years. He's been a big advocate of Harvard making big efforts to try to identify students who are from the low-income backgrounds that they wouldn't necessarily find just through their ordinary processes. It's incredibly hard, but one of the important things is, regardless of your early program, if you have a good enough pool and you make a big enough effort, you can redress that later on. For instance, if you didn't have a football team, if you didn't have enough football players, you could find them in the regular pool. If you feel like you don't have enough really good, talented, low-income students, you can emphasize that in the regular pool, whether or not they turn up in the early pool.
Chris Avery, professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government and author of The Early Admissions Game, thank you so much. And Julie Park, assistant professor at Miami University and author of Who Goes Early, thank you so much. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.